the case for external guidance. Thinking beyond ourselves. Human beings are endowed with freedom, yet we often struggle to use this liberty well. Inanimate things in the universe obey natural laws without hesitation, and animals live by instinct without doubt or debate. By contrast, only humans must consciously shape their destinies, and paradoxically, despite remarkable faculties, we frequently stumble in directing our lives. Measured against the vastness of reality, the human creature appears, in a profound sense, incomplete. The universe is an interconnected whole. To frame a coherent way of life, one would ideally understand the whole. We are but fractional parts of this immense tapestry, and to unlock the meaning of our existence would seem to require a grasp of the cosmos in its entirety. History shows that humanity has repeatedly wrestled with this impossible task. Contemporary science, for all its triumphs, confirms our limits. Our capacities cannot contain the totality of knowledge that such an undertaking would demand. Water is channeled by the contours of the earth. Animals follow paths etched by instinct. They are untroubled by questions of right and wrong. Their world simply unfolds. Humans are different. Our exploration of life reveals an inbuilt moral sense and a persistent awareness of ought. We cannot fully detach ourselves from this ethical striving, yet we find it hard to anchor it securely. Our perception, bounded by immediate senses and personal standpoint, yields a subjective view. We intuit that true, objective values must exist, yet we struggle to see them steadily and whole. Whenever people attempt to plan a life, two fundamental questions appear. First, what should be the foundation of action? Second, what limits ought to govern it? The soundness of any human endeavor depends on how we answer these two questions. And yet there is no purely human method that guarantees precise, universally compelling answers. Consider male-female relations. Early optimism suggested that a neat formula could capture the dynamics of the sexes. Closer, longer scrutiny revealed deep psychological and physiological complexities, not easily reduced to simple equations. The result is a tangle of social, cultural, and familial dilemmas, real problems with elusive, sometimes blurry, solutions. A similar pattern emerged with the harnessing of mechanical power in the 18th century. As factories multiplied, ownership came to include power over livelihoods. Economic exploitation fused with property. This provoked a revolt against old assumptions and the rejection of private ownership in some quarters. Yet after decades of ambitious experiments in the developed world, the verdict became stark. Eliminating ownership often created harsher forms of control and acquisition. Humanity found itself without a solution that truly matched human nature as we actually experience it. Another mark of our distinctiveness is our forward-looking curiosity. Humans know that tomorrow exists. Other creatures live contentedly in the present. At the same time, human life, though brief, is full of joys and achievements. As aspirations are fulfilled, the nearness of mortality is felt. The technological revolution has opened doors to comforts once unimaginable, yet it has also sharpened our sense of life's bitterness. Industrial pollution and other unintended harms have revealed the costs that accompany progress. On one side, a variety of anti-science sentiments have arisen. On the other, careful psychological and medical observations have probed human experience at life's edge. The study of death and dying, thanatology, has grown as a discipline that asks what persists, what ends, and what these thresholds mean. Such currents have pushed many to seek a more fitting philosophy of life, one that does justice to our freedoms, our limits, and our hopes. Two broad explanations present themselves. The first sees humans as incomplete beings adrift in an all-embracing cosmos, a puzzle for which the universe offers no answer. The second contends that an answer exists, or at least that one might reasonably expect it to exist. Empirical science cannot settle which of these is true. Its methods, by design, are bounded. Yet reason leans towards the latter. If the universe displays a breathtaking order, laws for stars and seasons, instinct for birds and beasts, it is implausible that the one creature tasked with moral choice should be denied any corresponding guidance. The pattern of provision elsewhere suggests provision here as well. External hints abound. Just as needs are met throughout nature, so too the deepest human need, to live rightly and meaningfully, ought not to go unanswered. Religion therefore presents itself as external guidance, revelation from the divine. In the 19th century, religion was often dismissed as a social construct or a psychological illusion. Increasingly, however, modern inquiry has revisited that dismissal, finding that religion's claims about meaning, morality, community, and human flourishing illuminate questions that remain otherwise unresolved. Far from being a relic of credulity, religion supplies a horizon wider than individual perspective and a criterion more stable than shifting consensus. Taken together, these observations point in a single direction. Human liberty without trustworthy guidance becomes confusion. Human intellect without a larger light becomes partial. Human conscience without a sure anchor becomes weary. If we are to live wisely, the evidence of our condition, our grandeur and our fragility, suggests that we require a word from beyond ourselves, a reference point that can ground action and fix its limits, a compass that does not spin with the fashion of the age. Revelation claims to be that compass, and if the universe is as ordered as we find it to be, it is at least reasonable to expect that such a compass has indeed been given. Whenever people attempt to plan a life, two fundamental questions appear. First, what should be the foundation of action? Second, what limits ought to govern it? The soundness of any human endeavor depends on how we answer these two questions. If we are to live wisely, the evidence of our condition, our grandeur and our fragility, suggests that we require a word from beyond ourselves, a reference point that can ground action and fix its limits, a compass that does not spin with the fashion of the age.